ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Looking at your finances more closely this tax time? On the ABC Business Daily podcast, we break down the stories shaping employment and the economy. And as the financial year comes to a close, we're breaking down what you need to know about super, write-offs, property, and shares in a special tax series. Hear it now. Search ABC Business Daily on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
One Nation has had a seismic surge in support since the start of the year. So how is it managing to attract more interest and potentially voters? Well, part of it is Pauline Hanson's prolific use of social media and her appearance on podcasts like Carl Stefanovic's. Today, marketing expert Toby Ralph on how One Nation became so persuasive. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Toby, given One Nation's polling success this year, we're going to have a look at the party's strategy when it comes to getting its message out. And really, it does come from a playbook deployed by the right of politics elsewhere in the world, doesn't it, in the US and the UK?
It does indeed. There's a sort of mid to far right side of politics that's bubbling up around the world as the world kind of shifts in what I call the evaporation of average. The middle's declining in almost every segment you can look at, including politics. And people are sort of moving to either end of it and the middle's collapsing.
And social media is key to this. It's a populist campaign, anti-establishment, and they use social media to spread this message.
They do, yeah. Social media is a really powerful thing to divide people. Mm. It thrives on outrage. It's not particularly concerned about truth. And it's consuming 75% of all revenues now, which used to go to newsrooms. But yeah, it's powerful because it's where a lot of people get all their news now.
So social media is key, and we'll come back to that in a moment and how One Nation has been effectively using it. But given the controversy last week surrounding Carl Stefanovic, why don't we briefly now consider podcasting and how that has become another key platform for the political right. Now, that's particularly the case in the United States, isn't it, where we see the likes of Joe Rogan. Just tell me about that.
So Joe Rogan is one of the most successful media personalities in the world. He plays the right-wing card very successfully and makes a ton of money out of it. And we're seeing Carl Stefanovic potentially doing that over here. I think Carl, when he was working back at Channel 9, he no longer is, I think he was earning something like $2.9 million. But if he gets the Rogan playbook right, he can make a hell of a lot more than that.
Yeah, Joe Rogan, he was actually credited for playing a significant role in getting Donald Trump elected after Trump appeared on his podcast before the election.
Absolutely. These people can have they reach millions of people. Joe Rogan gets, I think, 60 million impressions a month. Mm. So he's reaching a lot of people. He's very persuasive. And the program creates a community of people who feel enormously strongly about what he says.
So I always got more publicity than other people. And it wasn't like I was trying. I don't know exactly why. Maybe you can tell me why.
Oh, I could definitely tell you. Because people were tired of someone talking in this pre-prepared politician lingo. And even if they didn't agree with you, they at least knew whoever that guy is, that's him. That's really him.
So, yeah, it's a powerful form of communication.
Okay, so Carl Stefanovic, he's obviously leaving Channel 9 now after he interviewed the far-right agitator Tommy Robinson on his independent podcast, a very controversial move.
Tommy, great to talk with you, finally. I'm surprised you're not dead yet.
So am I. I didn't think I'd make it a 40. I'm 43. I'm not even joking.
What, you reckon he's trying to emulate Joe Rogan, is he, in some way?
I think he is. That Stefanovic embracing him is the sort of play that Joe Rogan would do.
I really do admire your tenacity and the courage that you're showing in trying to stand up for what you believe is right and to hear your voice.
It's not what I believe is right. It's what's right.
It's almost like he's on his team, and that's unacceptable, I think. And it was certainly unacceptable to Channel 9.
And Pauline Hanson, she's also appeared on Stefanovic's podcast. In fact, she was his first guest.
Like you, I do love this country, and I want it to be unified, and I want us to fly the flags with pride.
You are so right. As I say to people out there,
it's a useful tool for the right, for people like Pauline Hanson, isn't it? Even Tommy Robinson during that interview, that unchallenged interview that Carl Stefanovic did, was heaping praise on Pauline Hanson.
Yes, I'm sure he would be heaping praise on Pauline Hanson. You know, outrage fuels outrage. I mean, Hanson's core appeal is that the political system is broken and she's a grenade that can be thrown in there. You know, if you dislike politicians, I'm the politician you can vote for because I dislike the other ones. You know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend is the old Persian maxim. And that's the card she plays. And, you know, the thing about podcasts, you get left podcasts and you get right podcasts. The right tends to have a bigger audience, but you get extreme views and they go unchallenged, which is a shame because people take it for truth.
Okay, so Toby, as we have seen in the US, podcasting can be a very powerful tool for politicians. And of course, let's return now to social media, because that is also a very powerful tool. Now, the data shows that One Nation is better at this than any other party. Pauline Hanson has a lot more followers on places like YouTube, TikTok, Facebook than the Prime Minister, and like masses more than Angus Taylor, the opposition leader, doesn't she?
Oh, absolutely. Pauline's fan base, if you want to call it that, are those people who are disaffected with politics. And there are a lot more of those than who are serious followers of politics. I mean, if you look at the fundraising she just did for her Fire the Liar campaign, she raised $5 million in sums of about $56 on average. Mm. So, you know, 95,000 people chipped in their hard-earned to support her. 95,000 people. Mm. So she's playing a populist game there. But what she's fundamentally saying is, I hate politics. If you hate politics, I'm your gal. You know, so it's politics of grievance. Mm. And that's very popular. And she not only does that, but she uses humour. She uses South Park-style cartoons. People find them funny and they're engaging and they're putting down politics and she's being direct and she's saying some things which other politicians don't say. And there's a bunch of people who like that.
Her web cartoon, as you mentioned, it's called Please Explain. It's been around for a few years now, since 2021, but it's generated millions of views, around 50 million views over that time. What is actually appealing about that to people, do you think?
It's sending up the system. It's saying politics is stuffed.
Hi, it's me, Anthony Albanese, and I love spending your money, whether it's a virtue signalling referendum or more private jets for me and me mates.
We're going to make fun of it. We're going to position her as a heroine who'll come in and chuck a grenade into the entire apparatus of the polity in this country.
Come on, Bob. We've got work to do.
We're going to get past them.
I've got an idea.
And please laugh along with us.
Yeah. She posts a lot of short clips as well, doesn't she? And she's often, well, most of the time she's complaining about something or someone.
Well, all you lovers of renewables out there, you know, this is what you're going to be paying. Happy about that? I'm not.
She is, and complaint and outrage works amazingly well on social media and attracts following. You know, the difficulty that Labor and Liberal have is they have to put up sensible policies, and that normally involves a bloke standing in front of three flags explaining that things are complicated, and guess what, they are. Mm. But it's boring and annoying, and if you hate politicians, it's fuel to Pauline's fire.
Yeah, and then when the algorithms kick in,
yeah, oh yeah,
you know, the more you watch, the more you see. So that's very powerful, isn't it?
It is. One of the problems with social media is, as you say, it's algorithm driven. It's concerned with keeping your eyeballs on it because that's where the money comes from. Whereas conventional media is at least operates to a code where it must be about truth, not outrage.
Yeah.
So, which is why social media can be so very damaging. But the algorithm kicks in and it turbocharges both views and the viewing statistics and the outrage that people feel. So it fuels anger as well.
Yeah, and just to note as well, I mean, it is a tool used by the right of politics very successfully, you know, social media, but it is also used successfully by some in the left as well. For instance, David Pocock is quite good at it.
Yes, he's run hard on gas tax and developed quite a cult of personality around that.
Here are two numbers the Prime Minister does not want you thinking about. $45 billion. That's how much extra cash gas companies made in the 12
months.
But
it's the right that seems to be getting the swarms at the moment.
Yeah, all right. Well, Toby, you have worked on dozens of political campaigns. Wow, how things have changed, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, how important is it now that political parties lean heavily on social media? What are they without it?
Well, it's a significant way of reaching people who are undecided.
Mm.
It's an unfortunate thing because you get success if you campaign by complaint and by grievance, and you don't get success if you present answers. And that does a couple of things. First, it attracts votes in the very short term, but it also shifts the dynamics of the system. We're moving from a duopoly at the moment to a multi-party democracy, and parties of protest and sort of niche parties are grabbing their share.
All right, well, Pauline Hanson, as we said, and One Nation have been relatively successful here, but what you do think that translates into votes, do you?
I think it does. I mean, we can look at the recent Farah by-election, for example, which was won by One Nation. They had a good candidate in David Farley, who was a local guy, local farmer, understood the water issues and things locally. Having started being pretty equal in the polls, it was a thumping victory for One Nation. But Pauline Hanson's One Nation messaging was simple, direct, and worked very well.
So, Toby, what do other parties, particularly Labor and, of course, the Coalition, what should they actually be learning from all of this, from One Nation's successful social media strategy?
I think what the major parties really have to learn is that the way to win elections is to have solid policies, solid common sense, and to stick to the long game of trying to do the right thing by the country. And a slide into populism gives you a sugar hit but doesn't give you longevity. I think the two major parties have been on the slide for a long time, and we're heading toward a multi-party democracy. I don't think that's going to be altered by trying to do things in social media. I think that's structural, and I see it happening across society, not just in politics. It's part of a phenomenon which I call the evaporation of average. We see it in everything. I mean, look at retail, for example. If you want to buy an Hermes handbag for $40,000 or more, you have to buy a sofa first and you have to queue up for 6 months. It's up at the top. If you want to buy one from Primark, you'll get it for $3. But in the middle, the great department stores like Debenhams and Macy's and Meijer are struggling. Their product is glued to the shelf. So mid-range, middle-class products aren't selling. It's the high and the low end are. We see that with cars. Lamborghini, up 322% in the last 3 years. The Chinese cars, Great Wall, BYD, their sales are up tenfold. But in the middle, we've got Ford and Mitsubishi, the middle-class offering, leaving the country. It's happening everywhere you look. In politics, I think of that as a very similar situation. The great department stores of Liberal and Labor are losing shoppers and have been for a long time. And they're going to the high-end boutiques of the Greens and the Teals, or the discount department stores of Jackie Lambie and One Nation.
Mm.
People are shopping at the top and the bottom and ignoring the middle. Mm. And that's going to continue happening.
Toby Ralph is a marketing strategist who specialises in persuasion. This episode was produced by Bridget Fitzgerald. Audio production by Anna John. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.